We're having a number of members that are stuck on the highway. We're going to take about a 15-minute recess. We'll be back at 8:20. I am sorry if this is inconvenient, but we don't have enough people here to do business. So let's try 8:20, and we'll reconvene. Okay. All in favor of accepting the minutes, say aye.
Aye.
Okay. Minutes pass. Representative Sandell, would you like to come down and bring your testifiers?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I appreciate the invitation. This is the first time I've visited the committee on the corrections, and I have a treat for you, and if I could present that for the testimony, that would be great.
Well, the pages will do that for you.
Yes.
Oh, yes.
Ooh, looks like something good.
I heard someone the other day make a presentation to one of the committees I'm on, and she said the treats today are from Willett's Bakery, which is the best bakery in town. And I didn't say anything, though. The best bakery in town for years was at 812 Goodrich in St. Paul. And we've now moved to Woodbury, and the best bakery in Woodbury is at 4936 Woodlawn.
Doesn't hurt to get a little plug for the hometown folks, yes.
I'm looking very favorably upon this bill.
Yeah.
Special to prairie.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, and ladies and gentlemen. I appreciate the invitation to be here today. House File 1575 is about the experience of being arrested and entering any of our jails or detention centers, an event probably more memorable for its resentment and trauma than for meditation and reflection. But I asked to carry the bill because it offers some good ideas in at least three reasons and three points of view. First, the bill requires that the sheriff or the local corrections authority will identify an inmate who may need mental health support services, and with the inmate's permission, share that information with the county social service agency. Second of all, it describes services that the individual may benefit from upon release: help applying for medical assistance from Minnesota Care, a case management referral, a 30-day supply of necessary medications, and a timely appointment and follow-up with community mental health services. Finally, the bill provides for the protection of personal information. Should the inmate choose at any time to end the service, all personal data will be destroyed within 15 days. It sounded like a good idea to me, and I hope I'll have your support. I've asked Dr. Kelly Harder, the Director of Community Services for Dakota County, to provide details and answer your questions about the bill. Thank you.
Dr. Harder.
Mr. Chairman and committee members, my name is Kelly Harder, and my day job is the Community Services Director in Dakota County. I am here on behalf of MICA and Metro Interagency of Council of Counties, and we've been wanting to move this bill. In summary, I look at it as this simple. An individual comes in, is booked in Dakota County. We book about 800 individuals per month. Part of the booking is that they do a mental health screening. The wonderful, wise, and thought leader Sue Abderholden in the audience, I'm going to give her a reference. I love how she said, you know, screening is referred, it's like a thermometer. It doesn't tell you what it is. It is not a diagnostic. It doesn't tell you exactly what's going on. It says there may be a temperature here that something needs attention, and we should look further into that by those who are professional experts. And so that evidence-based, academically backed screening assessment that's filled out by the individual, if it triggers a certain level of concern, it would flag, and it makes only sense to me that we would then make the referral to the mental health authority, who happens to be in the county social services in each county, to then do a voluntary follow-up to ask the individual if they, what's going on and would they like services. That is a voluntary process. If the person doesn't respond, if the person says no, all that, and the only information we're going to get is name, maybe date of birth. We're not getting any more information than that. They'd be able to get access to the screening tool, nothing more. I want to be really clear. This is not diagnostic. They are not doing mental health diagnostics or assessments or determining whether there is or is not a mental illness or not. We think this makes really good sense. We think it's good for the citizens. We think with the author's amendment that's going to limit the data to 15 days, it protects, in the spirit of Minnesota data practices, it protects information from just being somewhere where it shouldn't be if the person doesn't give permission. Once we engage the individual, all proper releases of information would have to be agreed upon and signed by that individual for further care and treatment. And with that, I will stand for any questions for clarification from the committee.
Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Glad you're here today. This is something that has come up over and over again. I recently toured in Hennepin County Jail and realized that they've got sort of a forward-thinking process that they use there. They obviously have the tool, just as you're describing it, but they also have social services sort of embedded within the, so they three or four people come down on a daily basis and kind of do a check through and see if anyone is in need of services. So they figured out somehow how to get around the impediment. And can you explain what is the impediment in our current statute to have that coordination? I'm not sure exactly how they've accomplished that. I just know that they have, and maybe you could speak to that.
Yeah. Mr. Chair?
Mr. Harder.
Representative committee members. So Hennepin and we too in Dakota have what we'd say embedded social workers who work within the jail itself. And in fact, our jail too has program and staff within the jail staffing that also reach out and provide supports. And so that works really well for those who are in the jail and stay in the jail for a period of time. Of those 800 bookings, about 70% will be out within 72 hours. And so that's the other issue, is that those who've worked in the jail, some, and chairman, know that it's a volume business. And most what we want to do as the mental health authority is to make sure it might not even happen so much at the jail, that we do have time that we can go and just check in with them, get the releases. And if they want follow-up, it assures the connectivity between the mental health authority and that individual back out into the community. One way you can work around this is we can deploy staff at and in the jail, or they have to be jail staff under the Data Minnesota Practices Act. The entity is the sheriff's department, really has possession of that data. And if they have workers and social workers who are part of their organization, they can get access to that information. But most jails around 87 counties don't have enough resource or have that arrangement, so it remains the mental health authority, which is under the social services as a governing entity, is separate from the sheriff's entity, and we need the data practice bridge that allows that to connect. And so there are ways we are doing this work, and we're serving people well. Hennepin's a great example of that. And there are others, those tend to be more of the anomaly than the rule. This actually doesn't get in the way of their continuing to do that great work. It creates a bridge for outstate and other metro counties who now could really have assurances. I hope the day comes where my adult authority, adult intake, open up their computer in the morning. They would have from the booking the day before the list of individuals by name who were booked in and may have flagged as a concern or need. And one of the first things they're going to do is go to the jail or reach out to the jail or make calls to get connected with those individuals. It seems so simple and really not that real significant, because there's so much that can come from it, but it is so significant that we can't even do that right now legally, if that answered your question, Adam.
Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It does. And I was just trying to figure out how did Hennepin manage it, and they're technically in the same building, I suppose. I'm not quite sure, but they are completely different departments still. This bridge is obviously incredibly important so that they can share that very narrow data. I'm assuming this will go then to judiciary, since it does have a data sharing component, Mr. Chair?
I would believe so, yes.
Okay, very good. Very good. Well, thank you. Thank you.
Anybody else with any questions?
You move the amendment, the author's amendment on that.
Mr. Chair.
Oh, do you have an author's amendment?
There is an author's amendment that changes the amount of time that information would be held by the jail or social services agency from 30 to 15 days. Do I need to move that amendment?
I have to move it, or somebody up here. Has everybody had a chance to review the amendment? Okay. I will move the author's amendment to get the bill into the shape that he would like it. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Anybody opposed? Okay. Now, the next thing. So moved. Okay. And we are. Where are we laying it over to?
We're laying it over.
Okay. I guess right now we're going to lay it over for possible inclusion, and it will be going to the judiciary.
Well,
okay, maybe.
I guess.
Yes.
I guess just a question about that. If the motion is to lay the bill over for possible inclusion in the division report.
Yes.
Or the subcommittee report. I guess to Representative O'Neill's point, if there are data sharing provisions in this that would have to go to judiciary, civil law, what's the bill path for this bill to kind of check those boxes?
I've been informed. We're laying it over right now, and there's a number of bills that have some data privacy, so we're trying to maybe put them all into one bill that we can send to judiciary that they can take care of at once. Is that
okay?
Amenable?
Yeah, that word.
Okay. Representative Zend. Goodness gracious. It's a good thing I got you today. I'm sorry. Anybody from the audience, would you like anybody to comment before we move forward? Sue? No. Okay, let the record reflect that Ms. Everholding turned down that testimony. Okay, so then last word, Representative Zandel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was pleased to be asked to handle this bill. I thought it benefited those inmates who were detained for a while. I think it's a benefit to the social service agencies within each county, and I think it's a benefit to all of us in society. So I appreciate your support and look forward to talking with you later. Thank you.
Fine, Bill. Then, without, if we're holding it over, then we don't need a vote, right?
Nope.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. Next, Representative Zerwas, are you ready? Okay, let's do that right away this time. I heard you had a harrowing experience on the highway today.
Just slow. Very, very slow and very boring. B-boys, on snowy days like this, they say, well, you know, just drive safe. Well, I never got above 4 miles an hour, so
that's
I never felt in any real danger. thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, members, I'd like to move House File 493, and I'm guessing it's going to be laid over for possible
inclusion. Yes.
Yep. So that'll be my motion, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, I have an A1 amendment to get the bill in the shape which we'd like to discuss it today.
You're moving that.
Yes, sir.
Okay. Any discussion on the amendment? Not hearing any. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
So moved. Okay. Representative Zerwas.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, House File 493 is a bill that I've been working on for, I think this is the third year now, that I've been working on. This comes after a series of reports done by the Star Tribune detailing conditions and stories of inmates within the Department of Corrections Administrative Segregation Units within the prisons at the DOC. And the challenge is, Mr. Chair, that in that report, in that series of Star Tribune articles, there were a lot of really challenging pieces of information that came out. Information about inmates that were kept in solitary confinement and administrative segregation or solitary confinement within the DOC system generally means an individualized cell with limited contact to individuals outside of their cell, being held in that room for 23 hours a day with one day of one hour of recreation a day, except generally the recreation, depending on staffing, generally happened 5 days a week instead of 7 days a week. And so it was not uncommon that you would have a Saturday and Sunday in which an individual was in for 48 contiguous hours. And there was that, along with a lot of other challenging information put out in the Star Tribune report. They interviewed family members and individuals, Mr. Chair, that spent 300, 400, 500, 600 days continuously in isolation. And then one of the most challenging things about the story is it highlighted a few instances where after hundreds of days in administrative segregation, those individuals were released directly onto the street because their prison term had expired. And so the challenge I say to the committee is imagine having someone that spent the better part of two straight years with their entire human contact consisting of being fed through a slot in the door, putting handcuffs on to be transferred to a walled-in area with a chain-link fence cage over top of you for your one-hour recreational period, 1 hour a day, 5 days a week, for 600 or 700 days in a row, only to be released with the Department of Corrections saying, good luck, find stable housing and get a job, and try not to come back. It seems as though that is an absolute recipe for disaster and not a tenable situation. Mr. Chair, versions of this bill have been around, as I said, for 3 years. I'm happy to report that what we have just adopted in the A1 amendment reflects significant work by NAMI and specifically Sue Eberhold and her staff and our new Commissioner of Corrections, Paul Schnell, and the Department of Corrections staff who have worked tirelessly to come to some language that all parties at this point are agreeable to, Mr. Chair. One of the other most important parts of this bill that directly deals with the challenges that we all faced when the initial report came out from the Star Tribune is that when the Star Tribune contacted myself and other members of the committee 3 years ago with questions about the report they had compiled, I had almost no ability, Mr. Chair, to respond with any facts, data, or information. And for 3 years of requesting that information for the Department of Corrections, I was able to get zero information about the number of individuals held in solitary confinement, the lengths of stay, the how many inmates were kept over 365 days, how many inmates were kept in solitary confinement over 500 days. None of that information was able to be made available in the 3 years that I worked on this issue. And so, Mr. Chair, an important part of this legislation is requiring the department to keep track of this data and put an annual report back to the legislature so that we who are charged with some basic oversight of the Department of Corrections have the ability to at least answer some of those basic questions. With that, Mr. Chair, I'll hand it over to Ms. Eberhold for some testimony and then, of course, member questions.
Ms. Eberhold.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Sue Abderholden, Executive Director of NAMI Minnesota. I want to thank you, Mr. Chairman, for hearing this bill. And I really want to thank Representative Zerwas, who has been an incredible advocate on this issue for many years. And as he noted, this all started in 2016 with the huge Star Tribune series on this issue. segregation, solitary, restrictive housing, whichever term you would like to use. And they reported the data over 10 years, and that was data that was very difficult for them to get. But we had 17,500 Minnesota inmates were placed in solitary for disciplinary reasons. More than 1,600 had spent at least 6 months in solitary confinement over the last decade, and with 437 having lived in isolation for a year or longer. Over 700 inmates were released to the community directly from solitary confinement. NAMI became really interested in this for a number of reasons. While we can't definitively say how many of these inmates lived with a mental illness, we know that 14% of Minnesotans placed in solitary confinement were recommended for commitment for state-ordered mental health treatment, also known, obviously as civil commitment. So even by this narrow measure, it's clear that inmates living with a mental illness were disproportionately subject to solitary confinement. We also know that the brain doesn't finish growing until the age of 26, and we knew that there were many inmates under the age of 26 who were placed in solitary for long periods of time. And so we were really concerned about the lifelong impact that solitary could have on their developing brains. Research indicates that long-term solitary confinement has a debilitating effect on individuals, including visual and auditory hallucinations, hypersensitivity to noise and touch, insomnia, paranoia, uncontrollable feelings of rage and fear, distortions of time and perception, increased risks of suicide, and PTSD. If a person doesn't have a mental illness when they're entering an isolation unit, by the time they're released, especially if it's a long period of time, their mental health has been severely compromised. And these effects, of course, are magnified with two particularly vulnerable populations, people under the age of 26 and people with mental health issues. At least 30 other states, I want to remember, 30 other states in the last decade have taken steps to reform the use of solitary confinement, including curtailing its use, abolishing solitary for juveniles or people with mental illnesses, improving conditions in segregated units, or gradually easing isolated inmates back into the general population. This bill will keep Minnesota from falling behind. The House has twice passed various versions of this bill. And this year, as Representative Zerwas noted, we've worked very closely with the new Commissioner of Corrections to try to address their concerns and to actually make it workable. And we did meet last fall with MAIF as well to hear any concerns that they would have. And so what this bill is really about is transparency and sunshine so that everyone knows how restrictive housing is being used in our prisons and ensuring oversight. The bill actually allows the Department of Corrections to use solitary confinement. There is nothing in statute right now that allows them to even do that, which I think in the future perhaps could be a challenge. So this allows them to use it, allows us as a state to regulate it, and again to have data so that there's transparency. And I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Ms. Overholden. Representative Wogemont, Vice Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Aberhold, do you see a need for more staff to fill the jobs that will be necessary to follow through with these changes, more mental health services staff?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Wogemont, absolutely. And NAMI has strongly supported, especially the increase of mental health and substance use disorder staff, because we know that so many of the folks who are inmates are living with those conditions, and we need better treatment. Absolutely.
Mr. Chair, one follow-up. So I'm assuming you would support additional funding for that staff.
Mr. Chairman, Representative, yes.
Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Christensen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Is there a companion bill in the Senate?
Representative Zerwas.
Mr. Chair, Representative Christensen, yes. The companion bill is being identifying co-authors and should be dropped later this week.
Thank you.
Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm wondering if the commissioner will come down as well. I have a couple questions if he is willing to testify. Thank you. As he's coming down, I know that with the change of commissioner, we have a change in philosophy, and he and I have had multiple conversations. And to the committee as well, you really don't understand what it's like until you go there and look at one of the segregation rooms. And when Representative Zerwas talked about the cage, it looks kind of like a big kennel that you walk into, and that's where your rec time is. And I was really taken back by, I wouldn't say I'm claustrophobic, but I think I would be after spending time in that very, very small room, the way that it's structured, no outside light. So I can't even describe it. You really have to go and take a look at what the segregation looks like in their outdoor rec. But my question is, now we've got a new commissioner and a new philosophy. What are some of the policies that you've modified or changed regarding segregation?
Commissioner Snell.
Representative Neal, we have been really working closely, I think, with NAMI. Our staff at the department has been working with the wardens, has been working with the disciplinary procedures staff, the folks who are conducting the due process hearings around the use of restrictive housing. We've really talked heavily and extensively about behavioral health staff, specifically focused on this issue. And in the budget, there is 19 additional FTEs specifically focused on case management and behavioral health, targeting or focused on restrictive housing. We have been having discussions about the fact that really being clear about the manner in which we manage people in restrictive housing. Step-down management is one of them, and I think speaks directly to the concerns about releasing people directly into the community. Where there are more serious offenses, we are talking about right now an extension of the amount of time someone can be held in a restrictive housing. And while we have not finalized that or issued that policy yet, we are having discussions, talking with other departments across the country to establish and make sure that we're within the confines of best practices. We do feel that it is fundamentally necessary for the safety to be able to have a response to the most serious and egregious of conduct in the facility to use restrictive housing. At the same time, we believe that fundamentally our goal should be to ultimately reintegrate them back into the general population, and that should be done in a manner that where there's demonstrated behavioral conduct that allows us to have them return to the general population, or in those instances where they're getting close to their release date into the community, where there has been a step-down process so that we're not releasing somebody cold directly from restrictive housing.
Mr. Chair. Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So there's two situations that are kind of on the opposite ends of the spectrum. You've got someone that will commit a new violation, so to speak, because they just want to be alone. And, you know, as I toured all of the prisons, it was something that it was – reflected in every single prison that I talked to, that, you know, they're just afraid to be in the general population. They have great fear. You know, the mental illness might play into that, but they'll do something to literally just stay in. So you've got that spectrum. And then you've got those that are just dangerous and violent, and your staff is attacked and your staff is at risk. And, you know, those are two ends of the continuum. And so I know it's got to be incredibly challenging to try to come up with a policy that not only handles both of the ends of the spectrum, but everybody in between as well. Someone might have a really, really, really bad mental health day, and they lash out, and they need to they've already decompensated. They need some time to just be by themselves, and, you know, maybe it's 2 days, maybe it's a week, maybe it's 2 weeks. I don't know. But they just need some space and some time. So, you know, I give you a lot of credit because it's a very complicated issue. It's not simplistic. It's not, you know, obviously, egregiously, it had been used where, you know, as Representative Wass said, up to 500 days. And that in and of itself, just a few weeks more can go and cause mental health issues. But I can't even imagine 500 days, especially after standing in the room and standing in the area where they do the outside rec. As you develop those policies, I hope that you come back and kind of let us know what you've decided on and how you've come to that decision. And hopefully this bill will be a help, not a hindrance. That's how I see it anyway. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Commissioner Snell, you looked like you had a comment.
Thank you. Yes, I appreciate that. We want to make sure absolutely that when the policy is finalized and released, that it is, it has the kind of benefit of sunshine as Sue talked about. We want the public to know. We want all of our staff to know. We want everyone inside living in our facilities to know, because there should be no, there is no secret about what that ultimately is. And I think I want to draw a key distinction, because you point out something very important, the difference between administrative segregation at some level, and that is those times when, for some reason, whether it's a safety or security issue, someone is separated from the general population, or fear, or whatever it may be, a circumstance. And we would like to, we manage those differently, and we would like to, they have certainly different accesses to services and opportunities for recreation and those sorts of things, versus the disciplinary segregation, which is oftentimes what we're talking about in this bill, although both of them are of major concern, and it is something that we are giving considerable attention to.
Do you, Representative Zerwas?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. And I think one of the things I want to make sure that everybody knows about the bill is there's nothing within this language that would tie the commissioner's hands as far as setting out limits or guidelines on lengths of solitary confinement stays or the use of solitary confinement stays. It is very possible, Mr. Chair, that in those instances of extremely long uses of solitary confinement noted in the Star Tribune article, it is completely possible that in a few of those instances, or in some of those instances, that those individuals were exactly where they needed to be at the time they needed to be there. The challenge is, I can't confirm that, and the Department of Corrections couldn't confirm that. The record keeping for that process of extending someone's solitary confinement time and keeping people isolated, it was either non-existent or, after multiple attempts to gain some access to that, it just wasn't provided to the legislature. I'm under the belief, after many conversations with multiple individuals, that the record keeping just wasn't up to basic standards. One of the things that's called out specifically in this new language, Mr. Chair, is the timelines in which these issues are elevated eventually up to the commissioner or their designee with a layout of why the individual's stay in solitary confinement has been extended past 120 days. The challenge that I, when talking to individuals or family members after hundreds of days of their loved one being isolated for them or of them being isolated, a real fear, and I think you would probably sympathize with that fear to an extent, having been in the room and been there after 100 or 200 days, is individuals or their family members, I think very naturally start to wonder, who knows I'm here? Does anyone know? I mean, I see the guard, but does the warden know I'm here? Does his boss know I'm here? And do they know I've been here for hundreds of days? And that was in conversations with individuals following the Star Tribune series of articles. That is a theme that kept coming up with individuals and with family members. And so one of the goals in this bill is to make the accountability measures very transparent, and so that we know and they will know that, yes, you're there because you've earned your way there. And if you've been extended, there's a reason why your behavior has extended your time in isolation. And here is everyone that knows, and here's the plan to try through your good behavior to work your way out if you so do desire.
Representative, I guess I have a question. So part of it would be then establishing benchmarks or goals that the offender would need to reach to progress out of. Oh, kind of like that idea.
Mr. Chair, that is exactly the notion of the step-down management side of the work, the plan. Yeah.
But it's be real clear then that, you know, if you haven't achieved this, you need to work on that before you get advance.
Yeah, and Mr. Chair, Subdivision 7 of the bill requires the Department of Corrections to designate a system of incentives in order to work their way down.
Okay. Is there anybody in the audience that would like, Representative Wolgamott, sorry.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Zerlas, I just want to thank you so much for your years-long commitment to making these positive and necessary changes. Just a couple of questions. Do you have a sense of how many more licensed mental health services staff would be needed to carry out these changes? And on top of that, are you supportive of adding FTEs to make sure these needed changes can be carried out in the way that they need to?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, Representative Wolgamott, the bill calls for a lot of policy changes and some changes in record keeping. Certainly, I know there are some IT requests in the governor's budget. I know there's some case management requests in the budget. I know there's some correctional officer requests in the governor's budget requests. I think a combination to a degree of all of those will be needed to get our entire Department of Corrections system encompassing to where it needs to be. The specifics on how many case managers or how many correctional officers needed to be added above and beyond what's already allowed for in maximum budget, I'm not in a position to designate those exact numbers. I would caution, as I mentioned last night, that allowing an upper limit of, you know, 160 or whatever the final number is of additional correctional officers be hired, with 80 openings currently existing and a 30% loss rate on CO officers currently employed, I don't know that upping the allowable number of staff within the budget is the silver bullet that some may believe it is.
Mr. Chair, one last remark. Thank you, Representative Zerwas. I just want to be clear that I think these are good, positive changes, and I thank you for doing that, but I really believe that they can't be carried out without the addition of more licensed mental health services staff. Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Zerwas.
Yeah, and Mr. Chair, Representative Wolgamott and I would agree on that.
Thank you.
Any other questions from the panel, from the committee? Sorry. Anybody from the audience that would like to comment? Not seeing anyone. Okay, we're going to hold this one over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. And thank you, Representative Zerwas.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay. All right. The chair, me, moves to reconsider the motion bringing House File 1399 before the committee for layover for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. Okay. And I'm going to turn it over to my committee administrator to explain the reason why.
Wow, I like it.
First time for everything. The bill, the committee acted on 1399 without having official possession of the bill, due to the fact that we did not transfer it via memo to our committee. As a result, the chair will then make the motions necessary to officially bring the bill before our committee. And as such, he's just brought it before the committee, and now we will readopt the amendment.
Move to readopt the amendment. Any discussion? Move to reconsider the motion to pass the A1 amendment on House File 1399. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Anybody opposed? All right. I move to the next one.
Yeah.
Move to pass the A1 amendment on House File 1399. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay, good. Now I'm going to lay over the bill for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. And this is the one ombudsman bill that I think we actually all worked on together that day and really pleased with that. So that being said, I think we're done. We're adjourned.